course. She'll be your lead engineer on this project. There are details in there on what she'll need, space-wise. Donald took a gulp of water and forced himself to swallow. There's a lot of other people I could call in, sure, but this project can't fail, you understand? It needs to be like family, and that's why I want to use people I know, people I can trust. Senator Thurman interlocked his fingers. If this is the only thing you were elected to do, I want you to do it right. It's why I stumped for you in the first place. Of course. Donald bobbed his head to hide his confusion. He had worried during the election that the senator's endorsement stemmed from old family ties. This was somehow worse. Donald hadn't been using the senator at all. It was the other way around. Studying the drawing in his lap, the newly elected congressman felt one job he was inadequately trained for melt away, only to be replaced by a different job that seemed equally daunting. "Wait," he said, studying the old drawing. "I still don't get it. Why the grow lights?" Thurman smiled.
"Because," he said, "this building I want you to design for me, it's going to go underground."
Chapter 2. The Year 2110. Silo 1. Troy held his breath and tried to remain calm while the doctor pumped the rubber bulb. The inflatable band swelled around his bicep until it pinched his skin. He wasn't sure if slowing his breathing and steadying his pulse affected his blood pressure, but he had a strong urge to impress the man in the white overalls. He wanted his numbers to come back normal. His arm throbbed a few beats while the needle bounced and the air hissed out. 80/50. The band made a ripping sound as it was torn loose. Troy rubbed the spot where his skin had been pinched. "Is that okay?" The doctor made a note on his clipboard. "It's low, but it's not outside the norm." Behind him, his assistant labeled a cup of dark, gray urine before placing it inside a small fridge. Troy caught sight of a half-eaten sandwich among the samples, not even wrapped. He looked down at his bare knees sticking out of the blue paper gown. His legs were pale and seemed smaller than he remembered. Bony. "I still can't make a fist," he told the doctor, working his hand open and shut. "That's perfectly normal. Your strength will return. Look into the light, please." Troy followed the bright beam and tried not to blink. "How long have you been doing this?" he asked the doctor.
"You're my third coming out. I've put two under."
He lowered the light and smiled at Troy. "I've only been out myself a few weeks. I can tell you that the strength will return." Troy nodded. The doctor's assistant handed him another pill and a cup of water. Troy hesitated. He stared down at the little blue capsule nestled in his palm. "The double dose this morning," the doctor said, "and then you'll be given one with breakfast and dinner. Please, do not skip a treatment." Troy looked up.
"What happens if I don't take it?"
The doctor shook his head and frowned, but didn't say anything. Troy popped the pill in his mouth and chased it with the water. A bitterness slid down his throat. "One of my assistants will bring you some clothes and a fluid meal to kickstart your gut. If you have any dizziness or chills, you're to call me at once. Otherwise, we'll see you back here in 6 months." The doctor made a note, then chuckled. "Well, someone else will see you. My shift will be over."
"Okay."
Troy shivered. The doctor looked up from his clipboard. "You're not cold, are you? I keep it a little extra warm in here." Troy hesitated before answering.
No, Doctor. I'm not cold. Not anymore.
Troy entered the lift at the end of the hall, his legs still weak, and studied an array of numbered buttons. The orders they'd given him included directions to his office, but he vaguely remembered how to get there. Much of his orientation had survived the decades of sleep. He remembered studying that same book over and over, thousands of men assigned to various shifts, going on tours of the facility before being put under like the women. The orientation felt like yesterday. It was older memories that seemed to be slipping away. The doors to the lift closed automatically. His apartment was on 37, he remembered that. His office was on 34. He reached for a button, intending to head straight to his desk, and instead found his hand sliding up to the very top. He still had a few minutes before he needed to be anywhere, and he felt some strange urge, some tug, to get as high as possible, to rise through the soil pressing in from all sides. The lift hummed into life and accelerated up the shaft. There was a whooshing sound as another car, or maybe a counterweight, zoomed by. The round buttons flashed as the floors passed. There was an enormous spread of them, 70 in all. The centers of many were dull from years of rubbing. This didn't seem right. It seemed like just yesterday the buttons were shiny and new. Just yesterday. Everything was. The lift slowed. Troy pammed the wall for balance, his legs still uncertain. The door dinged and slid open. Troy blinked at the bright lights in the hallway. He left the elevator and followed a short walk toward a room that leaked chatter. His new boots were stiff on his feet, the generic grey overalls itchy. He tried to imagine waking up like this 9 more times, feeling this weak and disoriented. 10 shifts of 6 months each. 10 shifts he hadn't volunteered for. He wondered if it would get progressively easier, or if it would only get worse. The bustle in the cafeteria quieted as he entered. A few heads turned his way. He saw at once that his grey overalls weren't so generic. There was a scattering of colours seated at the tables, a large cluster of reds, quite a few yellows, a man in orange. No other greys. That first meal of sticky paste he'd been given rumbled once more in his stomach. He wasn't allowed to eat anything else for 6 hours, which made the aroma from the canned foods overwhelming. He remembered the fair, had lived on it during orientation. Weeks and weeks of the same gruel. Now it would be months. It would be hundreds of years.
Sir?
A young man nodded to Troy as he walked past, toward the elevators. Troy thought he recognized him, but couldn't be sure. The gentleman certainly seemed to have recognized him. Or was it the grey overalls that stood out?
First shift?
An older gentleman approached, thin, with white and wispy hair that circled his head. He held a tray in his hands, smiled at Troy. Pulling an open recycling bin, he slid the entire tray inside and dropped it with a clatter.
Come up for the view?
The man asked. Troy nodded. It was all men throughout the cafeteria. All men. They'd explained why this was safer. He tried to remember as the man with the splotches of age on his skin crossed his arms and stood beside him. There were no introductions. Troy wondered if names meant less amid these short 6 month shifts. He gazed out over the bustling tables towards the massive screen that covered the far wall. Whirls of dust and low clouds hung over a field of scattered and mangled debris. A few metal poles bristled from the ground and sagged lifelessly. The tents and flags long vanished. Troy thought of something but couldn't name it. His stomach tightened like a fist around the paste and the bitter pill.
"This'll be my second shift," the man said.
Troy barely heard. His watering eyes drifted across the scorched hills, the grey slopes rising up towards the dark and menacing clouds. The debris scattered everywhere was rotting away. Next shift, or the one after, and it would all be gone.
"You can see further from the lounge." The man turned and gestured along the wall. Troy knew well enough what room he was referring to. This part of the building was familiar to him in ways this man could hardly guess at.
"No, but thanks,"
Troy stammered.
He waved the man off.
"I think I've seen enough."
Curious faces returned to their trays, and the chatter resumed.
It was sprinkled with the clinking of spoons and forks on metal bowls and plates.
Troy turned and left without saying another word. He put that hideous view behind him, turned his back on the unspoken eeriness of it.
He hurried, shivering toward the elevators, knees weak from more than the long rest. He needed to be alone, didn't want anyone around him this time, didn't want sympathetic hands comforting him while he cried.
Chapter 3. The Year 2049. Washington, D.C.
Donald kept the thick folder tucked inside his jacket and hurried through the rain. He had chosen to get soaked crossing the square rather than face his claustrophobia in the tunnels.
Traffic hissed by on the wet asphalt. He waited for a gap, ignored the crossing signals, and scooted across.
In front of him, the marble steps of Rayburn, the office building for the House of Representatives, gleamed treacherously. He climbed them warily and thanked the doorman on his way in. Inside, a security officer stood by impassively while Donald's badge was scanned, red, unblinking eyes beeping at barcodes. He checked the folder Thurman had given him, made sure it was still dry, and wondered why such relics were still considered safer than an email or a digital copy. His office was one floor up. He headed for the stairs, preferring them to Rayburn's ancient and slow elevators. His shoes squeaked on the tile as he left the plush runner by the door. The hallway upstairs was its usual mess. Two high schoolers from the Congressional Page Program hurried past, most likely fetching coffee. A TV crew stood outside of Amanda Kelly's office, camera lights bathing her and a young reporter in a daytime glow. Concerned voters and eager lobbyists were identifiable by the guest passes hanging around their necks. They were easy to distinguish from one another, these two groups. The voters wore frowns and invariably seemed lost. The lobbyists were the ones with the Cheshire Cat grins, who navigated the halls more confidently than even the newly elected. Donald opened the folder and pretended to read as he made his way through the chaos, hoping to avoid conversation. He squeezed behind the cameraman and ducked into his office next door. Margaret, his secretary, stood up from her desk.
"Sir, you have a visitor."
Donald glanced around the waiting room. It was empty. He saw that the door to his office was partway open.
"I'm sorry. I'll let her in."
Margaret mimed carrying a box, her hands at her waist and her back arched.
"She had a delivery. Said it was from the senator."
Donald waved her concerns aside. Margaret was older than him, in her mid-40s, and had come highly recommended, but she did have a conspiratorial streak. Perhaps it came with the years of experience.
"It's fine," Donald assured her.
He found it interesting that there were 100 senators, 2 from his state, but only one was referred to as the senator.
"I'll see what it's about. In the meantime, I need you to free up a daily block in my schedule. An hour or two in the morning would be ideal."
He flashed her the folder.
"I've got something that's going to eat up quite a bit of my time."
Margaret nodded and sat down in front of her computer. Donald turned toward his office.
"Oh, sir,"
He looked back. She pointed to her head.
Your hair,
she hissed. He ran his fingers through his hair, and drops of water leapt off him like startled fleas. Margaret frowned and lifted her shoulders in a helpless shrug. Donald gave up and pushed his office door open, expecting to find someone sitting across from his desk. Instead, he saw someone wiggling underneath it.
Hello?
The door had bumped into something on the floor. Donald peeked around and saw a large box with a picture of a computer monitor on it. He glanced at the desk, saw the display was already set up.
Oh, hey!
The greeting was muffled by the hollow beneath his desk. Slender hips in a herringbone skirt wiggled back toward him. Donald knew who it was before her head emerged.